Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. I hope you're well. Sorry that this podcast is becoming a bit more sporadic. I say becoming, this is not a progression. I mean, last time I definitely said we're going to put these out more regularly. That's not happened. I'm doing the sitcom. Rupert's busy, so it's as uninteresting as that, really. Today's episode of Hip Hop Saved My Life is with Angie Thomas. She wrote a book called The Hate You Give, which was like a New York Times bestseller. She's just written a book that's come out in February this year called On The Come Up, and it's about a girl becoming a rapper or trying to become a rapper and the challenges that entails as she tries to sort of overcome her circumstances by achieving success from being a rapper. Angie is like a massive hip-hop head. She was a great guest. She knows her stuff. And, you know, being honest, it's nice having an American on, you know, because when you're British, you've got a slight degree of separation and she doesn't have that. So, yeah, it's a great episode. I'm sorry they're sporadic. I could say to you that we're going to try and keep them more regular, and we are going to try. Will that manifest itself as actual results? Who knows? Stay tuned. Anyway, for now, Angie Thomas, Hip Hop Saved My Life. Enjoy.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. How are you, Rupert?
I'm good.
Good?
I've had a wisdom tooth out.
When? Today?
No, like 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so why are we talking about it now?
Because it's infected.
Okay, so super disgusting. So how did that happen?
The wisdom tooth.
Like, how did you get infected?
Is it something about your life? I've got a thing called, what's it called? Dry socket.
Oh my God, this is like the worst start to any...
Why? So yeah, it's like throbbing.
What? So how do you get dry socket? Is it because
it doesn't seal over properly?
Okay,
so it's exposed root.
Yeah. Is that something?
Apart from that, I'm great.
But is that something that you've done, or is it just
it does happen. It can happen with post extraction.
Okay. Yeah. So, but you will be okay.
Yeah. It's a bit just.
Well, that's great news. That's great news for me. That's also.
I'm
great
taking
news.
Medication. So
that's
that
also
has its own side effect.
That you've got like yeah. What are the side effects?
I'm joking. I'm being silly.
But are you taking medication?
Yeah, just
man. So that wasn't a joke.
No.
But the side effects.
That was the joke.
Right. Are you feeling on form today?
I think so.
Yeah. I'm not, because I've turned up late. We're joined by our guest today. Is
got here early.
Yeah. A New York Times best-selling author, Angie Thomas. Hello, Angie.
Hi.
You've come all the way. Well, do you still live in Jackson, Mississippi?
Yeah,
right.
I do.
So you've come all the way from Jackson
and got here early.
Yeah. I've come from Crawley, and I have managed to be late. So I'm really sorry about that.
It's but okay.
Like, you know, I don't know. It's going to change the tone of this, really, because I feel really bad about it.
No,
but I can't help it.
But it was beyond your control, right?
We all had a nice chat before.
Yeah, what did you talk about?
Like American soap operas.
Yeah, soap opera called Passions.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you know a soap opera called Young and the Restless?
Yes.
Yeah, I was in that. Do you know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, just for one episode. They let me be like a cameraman.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't recognize me. It was
just,
it was just like a...
Oh,
it was just
like a short.
It was just like a little cameo.
It's fine. It was an iconic role. I remember, right now. My bad. It's all good.
It's fine.
This is a show where everyone apologises to each other.
And you are joined by your mum.
Yeah.
Hello. I know you're not on mic, but you can just nod and wave. There, she's waved. Angie, can you confirm that your mum did wave?
My mom did wave.
Do you see your mum always come with you on these things?
On this tour, she came. So she doesn't come on everything. She likes to go on the trips out of America. basically so she can go to places where Trump isn't there. So, yeah. So, yeah, she likes those trips.
Can I ask you, because I was just on my, when I was on my way here and the train that was late completely outside of my control.
I apologise.
But I was looking on Twitter and they showed that they've started retweeting again this video footage of Trump referring to Melania, and the woman that he's referring to is clearly not Melania. Have you seen this?
I have.
This, so what is the fallout from that? Yeah. Like, is that, have we established what was going on there?
Because it's funny because me, my publicist, and my mom, we were all talking about that yesterday in the airport. Yeah, you know, I think it's a body double, and they've shown like pictures, and we see the Secret Service agent who looks like the person they're trying to claim is Melania.
Right.
So no, someone called her Melania B, and so I'm like, that's it, because like she's shorter.
Yeah.
And like her face is not her.
Yeah, and she's black, which is so weird. No, I just if you're gonna try and get
but here's the real proof that she's not the real one. She holds his hand.
Right,
the real one does not hold his hand.
Yeah.
So.
Also, the other thing is, it's so his behaviour. Like, why he goes? She's right here. She's right here. Like, don't make reference to her, dude. What are you doing? If you're trying to get away with this, don't refer to her. That's exactly the opposite of what you should be doing. I don't understand. And Melania, do you want to say anything? Huh?
This is her right here.
Crazy. Like, it's so. That is her, definitely. By the way, in case anybody's suspicious that is not her, let me just reiterate for the benefit of the crowd, this is 100% Melania. I just want to make that crystal clear to everybody. And I would recognise her because I'm a husband. So, right. You know, I'm just telling you. It's so crazy.
No, it's the best. I think it's one of the best conspiracy theories, though. But I'm starting. I think it's true.
Yeah,
that's not her.
No, but at this point, you sort of wonder what would he have to do, because he's bulletproof. Every time, so many times, I've heard things where people have gone, "Oh my gosh, he's in trouble." I mean, he's definitely going to be gone now. It just doesn't matter. He could literally pull out a gun and open fire on the crowd. And he would get away. Honestly, I just don't know what
he's like. Trump.
Yeah, that is just.
He actually said that once. He said he could do that once.
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So let's not give him any ideas.
No. If that happens later on, I certainly don't want this podcast to be caught up.
You'd have more apologies.
And they will blame it on you.
I was listening to Hip Hop Saved My Life. Great podcast.
Wow, that's a good impression.
I know.
Isn't it? I've never really done it. I just pulled it out of the bag. Right there. Oh, mate. Anyway, listen, sorry, this is not what we're here to talk about. Okay. We're here to talk about you and your relationship to hip-hop. But first of all, congratulations on an amazing career so far.
Thank you.
Your first book, The Hate U Give, was number one in the New York Times bestsellers list. Like, critically acclaimed. Basically, you knocked it out of the park, right?
Thank you.
Yeah? And now, your book came out last month, didn't it?
Yes.
Your new book, On the Come Up. And this is particularly pertinent to this podcast, because this is about a young woman who's trying to become a rapper. One of the things that interested me was that you talked about, you were writing stuff before, and you're a writer before, obviously, you did your first book. Mm-hmm. But then when you came to write your first book, you felt it was important to represent the issues surrounding Black Lives Matter and the black people in America. And this is something that you felt you wanted to incorporate into your stories. How did you come to that decision?
Yeah, you know, for me, there were a couple of reasons. One, I was not used to seeing books about people like me, especially in young adult literature. You know, when I was a teenager, I hated reading because I wasn't used to seeing books about black girls. You know, like the two big books were Twilight and The Hunger Games. And I often say, I remember looking at those books and thinking, I cannot connect with this. Because one, Twilight, my mom would not have let me date a 300-year-old vampire.
Yeah.
You know, I would have brought Edward home and she would have been like, you were born when? No. no, goodbye. And that's it. That's not even a short story, much less a novel,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And then The Hunger Games, she would have volunteered as tribute. I wouldn't have even had a chance to raise my hand. So I'm like, what is this? You know, you know, black parents is a whole different thing. So I was not used to seeing books like that. So I wanted to create those books. And I think that's important, you know, so that kids can have something to see themselves in and then to see other people unlike themselves. And it was just, and it was cathartic too, to be able to tell stories that people like me connect with and that we can feel seen and heard in and express ourselves and our true authentic selves, be our true authentic selves. So it was cathartic for me. So I think that's why we all write, is because it's a way to release emotions for us and stuff like that. And one of the best ways to do that is to write stories that we actually identify with.
Right. And did you encounter any sort of opposition? Because obviously you're doing something that's quite different. Your first book was very different. And this is like the story of like somebody trying to get into, become a rapper, and it sort of backfires because of, not backfires, but she sort of gets misconstrued, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
So did you encounter any opposition to that? Or were people like, oh my God, this is like completely different to what's being written at the moment? Like, what was your experience?
You know, I didn't face opposition like I thought I would, but I think the thing is, you know, I've sold a certain number of books at this point. They're like, whatever you write, we'll take. So, you know, that's just...
If you'd have sold 8 copies, they would have been like, yeah, we're just sort of think about this whole message thing and how married you are to it.
Yeah, it would have been different then, yeah. But, you know, but like my editor and I, we had a great conversation about it. And, you know, I wanted to continue a conversation about black girlhood and what that looks like. And then what's it like to be a young person in America? Especially a young person of color, and I think both books do that. You know, with Hate U Give, we see Star dealing with racism and systemic racism and police brutality, but with Bree, we see what so many everyday black girls face, you know, and that's dealing with stereotypes, that's dealing with poverty at times, that's dealing with people making assumptions about you and censoring you and all of these things. So it's for us, it's just, I feel like we're still in that same realm, just a different topic. So I often say Star and Bree are two sides of the same coin.
And when your book's about hip hop, did you have to like, did you just write from your own sort of experiences with no hip hop, or did you sort of immerse yourself in that world to try and get a bit more insight into it?
I wrote about my own experiences. I'm a hip-hop head through and through, you know, and I wanted to be a rapper when I was a teenager.
Right.
I sucked at it, but I wanted to be a rapper when
you and I have that in common.
Oh, really?
Because I was a dreadful rapper.
What was your rap name again?
My rap name was Ranga, the Lazy Eyed Assassin.
What was yours?
Oh, mine was like Young Short A.
Okay. Your name's a lot better than mine.
No, yeah. I don't know about that.
So how far did your career get, like your rap career?
I mean, I did like a radio interview. I was in Right On magazine, which was a teen magazine, and I had like an article in the local newspaper.
But did you have a release? You had a track out? Huh?
No, I did a demo.
Right.
And like, it wasn't good. That's it.
Do you remember any of the track titles?
What?
Do you remember any of the song titles?
I don't. I really don't. Yeah. I don't. I think,
and is that because you genuinely forgotten? Is it sort of, you know, when sometimes we like to just block out a part of our history?
I blocked that out. I blocked that all the way out. Like, somebody found an old article and they found my old website address, and I even forgot I had a website. I completely blocked that all out.
Yeah.
It was traumatic.
Was it still live?
I haven't looked. I should probably look.
Yeah, you need to get that
and
out.
And take that down.
Making a note.
I had no success.
Mm-hmm.
I used to put out some like mixtapes for like friends. And
how would
sell...
you put them out?
How we put them out?
Yeah, yeah.
We were just like
on MySpace. Or...
No. This was like this. I'm talking about physical.
Right.
I'm talking about physical copies.
Right.
Because I'm older than you. Like you're 30, right? 30.
31.
So I'm 10 years older than you, and I look it. But like, but we were putting out physical tapes.
Right,
so
yeah.
We would record these tapes and go and sell them.
Mm.
And like,
how many units
blew
to
up.
Shift?
I reckon. one of our mixtapes in sort of the Horsham area, we got like
the
between,
Horsham charts.
Yeah, we got about 15, 20 copies out.
Okay,
so, yeah,
that's a good debut, man.
And we got a lot of good feedback from like my mum.
Yeah,
and like my brother said it was good, and like one of my cousins liked it. So yeah, all good, man.
Yeah.
But one of the most embarrassing things I ever did. I said, you know, like. Trying to be hip hop mm-hmm. is one of the worst things you can. Like, what I mean by that is, I did like this. There's a spate in the UK of like rap battles, and like they're obsessed with rap battles, right? So we started. Mm-hmm. I used to do like these little rap battles. I was terrible, And then, like, I remember there's a newspaper there reporting on the rise of rap battle culture in the UK, right? And so, like, it was The Guardian. The Guardian. I don't know if you've had any deals with The Guardian, but, like, they're, like, super left-wing liberal paper. But they're very, like, this is really exciting new subculture emerging in the...
Horsham area.
Yeah. Rap battles where youth of colour can really express their rage and... You know, like, one of those, like, you know, that super, like, over-the-top kind of, like...
Yeah, yeah.
So they were there... And then they said, oh, can we take a photo of you? Because I'd just done a battle and been absolutely destroyed. But, like, I said, yeah, okay. And then one of my biggest regrets I've ever had is I just stood there for the photo. And then he said, could you be a bit more hip-hop?
Oh, my God.
And then the pose I threw was like, you know, like when, like, a white uncle turns up to something that, and says, yo, I'm MC Wacky Whack. And then, like... does like some super hip hop throw up the duffies like
oh
that.
My God.
Oh mate, I totally went, oh, it was so embarrassing. And then I thought, as soon as I did the pose and he took the photo, he went, that's great. I thought, he needs to destroy that.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the guts to say, oh, you know that photo I just posed for? You need to destroy that or I'm going to have to kill you. I was so embarrassed, but I didn't have the guts to say anything. So.
Did you get a copy though?
No.
Just pre-online as well, so it's not available anywhere.
No, I don't think so.
We'll have a look.
Might be in the archive.
A friend of mine works.
Yeah,
a friend of mine works there, I can find out.
Yeah, great, thanks, Matt. That's not
that. Here's a little bit that we like to call, how did you get into hip-hop?
So, you're a hip-hop head.
Yes.
How did you get into hip-hop?
By listening to it from the other kids in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like, I can call my mom out now. She listens to it now, but back then, like, she was
didn't
very...
like it.
No, she was into the old school and into church music, you know.
Okay.
So I wasn't hearing that at home. I was hearing it in my neighborhood with the right. older kids. So, like, I remember, like, hearing Ice Cream Man by Master P for the first time.
Right,
and
right.
I was a kid, so I literally thought he was talking about ice cream.
Yeah, yeah.
He was not talking about ice cream, people. He was talking about drugs. But... But I mean, here I am.
And that is, we should have given a spoiler alert. There could be people there that still think it's about ice cream.
I'm sorry.
Sorry to destroy that.
I just
that
ruined
for you.
It.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
No, but I was a kid, so I thought, oh, this is the coolest ice cream man I've ever heard in my life.
Hit the block dressed in white with some better jabos, a pocket full of stones. 3 G's and trying to lose these hoes. In the task coming sick cause it's the first of the month. Fiends on my page, you're like I'm trying to take these fools to lunch. Going crazy in the ghettos trying to kill me. My little homies lost his life, y'all fools feel me. I pack a heat cause I'm paranoid at nighttime. Bruns be pulling jacks, I'm in the hood busting gangsta rhymes.
So yeah, that's how I got into it.
So your
to
mom
it.
Wasn't very keen on you getting into it because of the language and stuff like that, right?
Probably. I mean, we'd already had like a little incident with me when I was younger with TLC.
Well, what happened?
When I was in pre-kindergarten, like 4 years old, my preschool teacher, she played TLC all the time during nap time.
Right.
But I was the kid, I did not sleep during nap time. So I'm listening to her play TLC's first album.
Yeah.
And I'm coming home at 4 years old talking about if I need it in the morning or the middle of the night. You know, 2 inches or a yard, rock hard or if it's sagging. At 4 years old. And so, and so she's like, what?
Yeah.
So, yeah. After
and
that,
you thought that was about what? Warm milk?
You know?
Yeah,
2 inches or a yard. Work harder if it's sagging. I think, I don't know what I thought that was about. I think it just went over my head. I thought it sounded good.
Your teacher needs to be
sagging. That's a weird
I mean, that was, that
that
is
time,
one of the most insane things for an educator. I mean, listen.
Maybe they fell asleep and just left it on
chapel. That is one of the worst examples of an educational practitioner I've ever heard of.
But I'm a huge TLC fan now, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of that.
So we listened to it in secret, or did your mum eventually just acquiesce?
She was eventually just okay with it. I mean, right. It's everywhere. It was everywhere, you know. And so I was listening to it all the time. So I was listening to Tupac.
Yeah.
I was listening to Biggie too, because I have no beef with them. They had beef with each other.
Yeah.
You know. And a lot of Southern rappers like Outkast and stuff. Especially once I started listening to Outkast, my mom really got into it. She loves Outkast now.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I mean, Outkast are like, I know that within hip-hop, mm-hmm. they are revered, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they should be heralded as geniuses. I mean, like, yeah. they're just unbelievable. Mum's nodding. Like, but they're just unbelievable, yeah. aren't they? I sort of feel sorry for Big Boy, if I'm being honest with you. Because, like, Big Boy is, like, one of the best rappers ever because yeah. of Andre.
He gets overshadowed.
But he's doing great work as a pitbull dealer, isn't he? Something?
Yeah, yeah, he breeds pitbulls, so yeah. But they were incredible, so... That's how I got into it.
Rack your brains. Give it some thought. What was the first hip-hop album you bought?
What was your first ever hip-hop album?
My first album was, I want to say, it's hard for me to call TLC hip-hop, but TLC was one of the first.
Yeah.
You know, but I'd have to say, the one I remember the most is Ready to Die by Notorious B.I.G.
Nice.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is this? Paging me at 5:46 in the morning. Crack of dawning. Now I'm yawning. Wipe the cold out my eye. See who's this paging me and why. It's my nigga Pop from the barbershop. Told me he was in the gambling spot and heard the intricate plot. A niggas wanna stick me like flypaper, neighbor. Slow down, love. Please chill. Drop the caper. Remember them?
Yeah, I remember having the tape and then the CD and just playing it over and over and over again.
I've been listening.
Yeah, I have as well today.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I forgot how rude yesterday. Some of the skits are talking about. There's some quite dirty stuff on there.
Yeah.
The skits specifically.
Well, I'd forgotten about it. But I'd forgotten about their skits. Yeah. But luckily, my eldest son's 9 and his teacher's been playing some of their skits during his nap time. So I was reminded of what was on that album. So that was great, just to get a little refresher on that.
Yeah,
he came home the other day, he was singing Machine Gun Funk. Like, it was great. But that's okay. So Ready to Die, like mm-hmm. for me, I love Biggie, right?
Yeah.
And would you say Ready to Die is your favourite of his album?
Yeah, I'd have to say so for sure.
Because Life After Death was like, it was good, right? But
yeah, but it was you could tell they were changing the sound towards the shiny suit era, you know. And that's nothing against the album, but you know, it sounds like Puff and shiny suits.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Ready to Die is way more gritty and just Brooklyn.
Ready to Die feels like. Like what Biggie really wanted to make, and mm-hmm. then like Puff just sort of like was chatting to him a lot and going, "No, you got to smooth it out a little bit." I remember like the One More Chance remix, when that mm-hmm. remix, you know, that sort of, it had a much more R&B flavour than the album original.
Yeah.
And then I started to get, I remember being really upset, like just going, "Oh no, man." have you heard Biggie remix, man? Like soft. Oh, that must be Puff, man. Like Biggie's like hardcore, man. I bet he didn't even know that was coming out like that, man. Like,
and you notice too, like on Ready to Die, you don't get a lot of Puff ad-libs, and on Life After Death, it's like,
oh my god,
he danced his way into the studio.
Life After Death, he's the first voice you hear on that record.
Yeah.
It's just like him talking to Biggie in hospital.
What would have happened? If he was still around now, do you think they would have fallen out?
What?
If he was still around now, do you think they would have...
I think they would have fallen out. Because he would have just gone, look, dude, listen.
Just chill out.
Yeah.
Like, I appreciate everything you've done. Do you want to relax?
Yeah.
Right? Do you want to just chill out a bit?
I don't need you on every song saying, take that.
Where you go, stop. Wait, just shut up.
What are you doing here?
You've literally got one of the greatest rappers of all time. Why are you even speaking?
Exactly.
I just don't understand it. I do not understand it.
And when Suge called him out for that, I remember I was a kid and I was like, yeah. If you don't want the producer all in the videos,
I know.
Dancing.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Suge Knight, he wasn't in the videos, but he did go on to sort of balance it out with some other stuff. But like, but like, he did keep a low profile, but it turns out there were reasons for that.
Yeah.
But I just don't. I respect. Like, have you seen? I follow like mm-hmm. Diddy or P Diddy. Well, I can't remember what his name is now. But like, I follow him on Instagram.
Yeah.
Have you seen this one video of him like in his office where he's like on the phone? Have you seen this video? Do you follow him on Instagram?
I do.
It's so good. He's like on the phone, right? And he goes, okay. And it's obviously like a deal's just being agreed. Mm. And he goes, yeah. And then he just puts the fan in and then he goes, yes! I'm a monster! Anything I want, I get it! Yes! What's next? Just starts absolutely...
And it's
supposed just to order pizza.
My
though.
God. Yeah. No, there's
no deal.
It's supposed to be some motivational thing. God. It's so funny, man. I love all that motivational stuff.
I'm a beast! Yeah!
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
mate. I just think I respect what he's done.
Yeah.
He set up the record label. He dominated the 90s. Like, but don't put those videos online, mate. Do you know what I mean? Just, you know, like, you can have those little moments. Just keep them to yourself. Nobody needs to see that.
Right.
Like, take that. That's the most...
Also, can I just say, in the video for Bad Boys for Life, mm-hmm. I've always had an issue with this, mm-hmm. where Puff, like, he's playing golf, right, mm-hmm. on the top of it. It's one of the ugliest swings.
I mean,
never has a man demonstrated that he doesn't play golf more effectively than him taking a swing.
Yeah, I have to agree. I agree.
So would you say Ready to Die is your favourite hip hop album of all time?
Yes, and it doesn't have Diddy.
Pre Puff.
it's definitely Well, I'd say one of my tops. Hard to say top.
Yeah. It's sure. difficult. It's a difficult, but it certainly is unbelievable. Oh my god, that wasn't even
now
deliberate.
Just drop the tune and then into the next section. It's a perfect edit point.
Live from Bedford Stuyvesant, the loudest one, representing BK to the fullest. Gats I pull it, bastards ducking when Big B bucking. Chicken heads be clucking in my bathroom fucking. It ain't nothing. They know Big B handling with the Mac in the actor paneling, bandaging MCs. Oxygen they can't breathe. Mad tricks up the sleeve.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Oh, man. Hip-hop gripes.
Is there anything about hip-hop you don't like? Are there any issues that you have with it?
You know, the treatment of women. I think that's just, you know, automatic. And it's not so much, it's not even just the way women are treated in songs. It's the way women rappers don't get the respect that they should. They don't get the props that they should. You know, Lauryn Hill is one of the greatest rappers of all time, and people don't put her in that conversation.
It's funny how money changes situations. Miscommunication lead to complications. My emancipation don't fit your equation. I was on the humble, you on every station. Someone play young Lauryn like she done. But remember not to game the one of the sun. Everything you did has already been done. I know all the tricks from bricks to Kingston.
You know, they don't get the props. And then when there's more than one woman, they make it seem as if there can only be one on top.
Oh, it's insane. That is unbelievable, isn't it?
It's like crazy.
It's either Nicki or it's Cardi B, or like, right. And they've all got a beef with each other. It's like,
nobody's putting J. Cole and Kendrick against each other.
I know,
like that.
It's so weird. Yeah. It is mad. And also, like, female hip hop is not a genre. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so weird. Do you know what I mean? The way it's so insane. But you know, what's your response to the argument that? Well, there's a couple of arguments we've got, because we've had a lot of people come on this podcast and talk about the misogyny of it. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear, Rupert's very much in favour of it all. I don't want to throw him under a bus.
You say in a
he
room
loves
full
it.
Of
it's
women.
One of your favourite things.
Yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it? Yeah,
yeah.
No, but there's a couple of arguments. There's a couple of arguments to do with it. One of the arguments is that, and I think Dr. Dre made this argument years and years ago, and people sort of revisit it.
Mm-hmm.
The argument is that with regards to sort of how women are spoken about in these records, mm-hmm. is that
it's a form of entertainment, and you're taking it to, people are taking it to, they're taking it too literally, right? So mm-hmm. that, you know, if it was in a film and you saw something violent, or you saw a murder in a film, or you saw this, that, and the other, you mm-hmm. wouldn't hold those people accountable. And so why are we holding rappers accountable for what they talk about in their songs? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, what's your response to that argument?
Mm-hmm. I think, I always say, for me, I think with hip-hop, there is a responsibility. But what I need more rappers to do is I need them to talk about the consequences and not just the other side. You know, like nowadays, that's what you see a lot of. You hear a lot of. They're not talking about the consequences. 6ix9ine was not talking about the consequences, but he has to live with them.
No, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we don't see that enough.
He didn't seem to show any kind of remorse or sadness about what was going on.
He was bragging about the stuff he's doing and doing it on social media.
I know. It was so weird. And he was almost celebrating. He was so excited about it. Mm-hmm. I thought, this can't be real. Like he can't really be going to prison. It's just like, does he know? Has somebody told him what prison's exactly. like?
Someone told him he's not Trump. He's not bulletproof.
I know.
Bulletproof.
yeah, sorry, anyway.
I want them to think about that. I want them to think about the fact that generations of kids are being raised on hip-hop. And you can say it's entertainment all you want, but you're going to watch a movie one time. You're listening to these songs over and over again, and this is the message you're getting over and over again. So it's a little more responsibility. That's not too much to ask, you know. But I'm not going to all blame it all on hip-hop, because music should not be raising kids. Yeah. You know, I was listening, like I said, to TLC at 4, but my mom didn't let them raise me.
No.
You know, no. So.
It was just your teacher that wanted that.
Yeah, it was the teacher.
Really
it was the teacher.
It.
But yeah, so it's tricky, because I never want to get into the whole idea of censorship.
Yeah.
I think artists should be able to say what they want without worry. But at the same time, it's just the specifically the treatment of women. If you're going to objectify us on one song, can you uplift us on another?
Yeah.
You know, can we get a little of both? And the thing is, too, I feel guilty, because there are songs that are very misogynistic that I enjoy.
I know.
You know, back that thing up. Like, me and a friend were talking about that. And we were saying, you know, after really listening to it, we're like, wait, but we do that whole thing that a lot of women do. We say, well, they're not talking about me.
Yeah.
You know?
Girl, you look good, want to back that thing up. You look big, fine woman, want to back that thing up.
They're
I feel sorry for those hoes that he's talking
exactly,
about.
Exactly, they're talking about some hoe. So, do we have some empathy for that hoe? You know? We don't. We lose it.
That sounds like a really great hashtag.
I know.
For like a campaign.
But so yeah, so it's we're all guilty of playing into the machine.
Yeah,
we are.
The other thing is, though, is like, you know, you still talk about Brie in your book, like mm-hmm. she has to make it under any circumstance. But I used to talk about this on stage, about the fact that, like, mm-hmm. not so much now, because like if you want to put music out, you can put it out direct to the consumer. It's much easier now. But mm-hmm. back in like the 90s or whatever, mm-hmm. like the record labels were like the gatekeepers. You couldn't right. really get your music out, you know, beyond mixtapes or whatever in Horsham. You couldn't really get like a nationwide release without the record labels. And they were the gatekeepers of what was being listened to, right? So mm-hmm. like, so after N.W.A. came out, you know, N.W.A., that album, Straight Outta Compton, is obviously amazing. We've talked about this before. But like the mm-hmm. legacy of that album is that hip-hop shifted towards this sort of profane kind of like gangster sort of... Mm-hmm. And that is a lot. That is now, for a lot of people, what hip-hop is synonymous with ever since, right? Even though right. we know that there's loads of positive hip-hop being made or whatever. And the argument is that loads of people are making lots of different types of hip-hop, but record labels decided that this is what they wanted. This is what they decided was going to be big. This is what they wanted to promote.
Mm-hmm.
And so, two things. One, that was all that was getting released. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, like, if you're trying to make it as a rapper and you're living in, like, really difficult circumstances, you sort of, you can't be blamed for saying whatever you think is going to get you a record. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, that's
yeah.
Like, you know, you can be positive all you like, but if it's a choice between being like positive and hungry
yeah.
or negative and paid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, how yeah. can you blame people for making that the latter choice? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what it's about. That's what I wanted to really talk about with this book, too, because
yeah.
so many of these rappers that people villainize, they're kids.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about 6ix9ine. He's young.
Yeah.
He is super young. And a lot of them, they're 21 and under. And we're talking about kids who just want to make it, and they want to make it however that is. And so I wouldn't blame them. You know, they have a responsibility, and they need to eventually eventually know that, but I blame the machine. I blame the industry because this is what they've told them. They've shown them these images their whole life and made them think that's the only way you can make it. So if you're hungry, like you were saying, they're going to talk about a hoe before they talk about being hungry.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what's going to get them paid so they don't have to be hungry. So it's sad to know, but I hope that, you know, with the shift we're seeing in the music industry, that artists are taking the power back. So maybe, just maybe, they can start changing what they talk about and changing this whole idea of you have to fit a certain image. And we're seeing bits and pieces of that. You know, we got rappers wearing dresses now. That wouldn't have happened. No. You know, we got rappers like Chance the Rapper. Chance doesn't talk about that stuff, and he has made it successfully. He's carving his own lane. So I think that now that the power is being taken away from the labels, maybe the power can be given back to the artists themselves, and we will see a change in hip-hop eventually.
Where do you stand on the fact that how old is 6ix9ine? Do we know?
Ooh, I don't know.
I just think that you should not be allowed to get a facial tattoo until you're 45 years old.
I agree with that.
45?
Yeah. I tell you why, because then if you've got a face tattoo, can we all... I know tattoos have become more accepted. I mean, I've got tattoos. Have you got any tattoos?
No, never.
Okay.
Never
so
will.
I know,
well, I'm
you never
45
will.
Soon, so maybe.
Okay, fine. But you know, like... If you have a face tattoo, I think it's fair to say, even with the relaxed attitude that we have towards tattoos, it rules you out of a lot of employment.
Yeah.
So 6ix9ine, when that's a long time for him to be in jobs that accept facial tattoos. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure you can even work in a subway with a face tattoo. It's not in this country.
But have you seen that girl who got Drake done on her forehead? Just Drake covering the whole of her forehead, the word Drake.
Are you being serious?
No, 100%.
I've seen that. Yeah.
You're just stuck with that.
Yeah. And he's not going to give her anything.
And also, the other thing is, Drake is not going to even like...
No!
Like,
why would he want to... No!
It's so crazy, man.
You just got to style it out, haven't you? Or get a long fringe.
Oh, I blame Birdman. It was when he and Wayne started getting all those face tattoos. All of a sudden, everybody's getting face tattoos.
Because the thing is, tattoos are so addictive. Once you get one on the face, you just think,
you might as well,
There's a lot of real estate.
What's your tattoo of?
My tattoo.
Oh, yeah, you've got
I've got Richard Pryor on my arm. But like, but even then, I didn't even, you know, it's so silly. Because I knew it was an extreme thing to do, to have such a large tattoo of Richard Pryor. So I didn't tell my wife I was getting it done. And then I came home. She said, "How was your day?"
Were you thinking I'm going to try and hide this for a bit?
I said, "Oh, I've had a massive tattoo of Richard Pryor put on my forearm, actually.
What about you?
What have you been up to?" And she said, by coincidence, she'd had Gene Wilder done. So,
still crazy.
What a weird coincidence that is. So now we go out on the road together. He's 22.
Yeah, 22.
So that is...
I feel like maybe... You don't get a face tattoo until you're in a certain tax bracket, too.
Correct.
You don't have to worry about getting a job. Then you get a face tattoo. Like, when you've got good retirement set up and investments, then you can get a face tattoo. But if there's a chance you're going to end up working at McDonald's, don't get a face tattoo.
No. Unless it is of something that they sell there.
Right, then
you know
maybe.
If you had to have one?
If I had to have a face tattoo? Yeah. I would have like the words, "This was done against my will," or
just like, that covers the whole face.
Huge font though, to sort of completely undermine it. What would you have done?
The logo of this podcast.
Oh.
Would you?
Yeah. Just
I don't even intend on being doing this podcast in like 6 months' time. It's such an insane thing to do. What about you, Angie? What would you?
I'd probably get something like religious, like a cross or something. So, if I'm trying to get a job, a Christian can't discriminate against me because I'm like, I got Jesus on my face.
That is a great idea. That is a great idea.
I'm in Mississippi. You know, I'm in the Bible Belt. I will go on the news and be like, they didn't hire me because I had Jesus on my face. And then all of a sudden, I've made the news and I'm getting the job. I mean, that's all it takes.
That is great. That is the first example I've seen of a face tattoo guaranteeing you employment.
Yeah.
That is the direct opposite of what I'd always assumed would happen with that. That is well
There's
done.
A guy who's got one with a penis going like from his ear to his mouth to
that's
the side of
true.
His lip.
That's
I promise you.
I've seen
Google
that too.
It. Yeah.
How come you've seen? How come you guys have seen all
that? We were here early. We were Googling.
Oh, what? Is that what you're doing while you're waiting for me?
Straight in,
little thing I like
hello.
To do with people I've just met is just look up face tattoos.
It's an icebreaker.
It's one of my favourite things.
Dick
face one? Oh, you've got to see this dick cheek tattoo. Oh, yeah. Because I've been talking to you for about, a minute and a half now. Oh, you've got to see this. You have got to see this. So, Angie, do you ever go to any live hip hop?
I haven't. It's been like I want to go to shows, and I'm always so busy that I can't go to shows.
Yeah.
But my goal is like, when Kendrick goes on tour again, I'm gonna be there.
Did you see it? You haven't seen him yet, no?
No, I watch it like on YouTube. So like when he did Coachella, I watched it on YouTube and I acted like I was there. So
How did that? Was that just you in your living room, just sort of? With
the,
it on.
The real live experience.
Rupert and I both went to see him when he came to London. It was a really mad show, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was wicked.
It was wicked, yeah. But it was very minimal. Yeah. It was
just him on the stage with, I mean, there's big production, but it's just him alone.
Yeah. Just in like a dressing gown.
Yeah.
It looked like a dressing gown, didn't it? It looked pretty cool in it.
Yeah, it was like all white.
Yeah, sort of, and then he disappeared and like he appeared on this. What I'm realising as I'm talking to you is live performance is not, does not really survive retelling.
Need to be there.
Does not really,
and sort of,
it doesn't really
beers,
survive.
So
you can't really convey it effectively
in
anecdote.
It's okay,
do you
it's
know what I mean?
Okay.
But let me carry on. So,
yeah. So good.
It wasn't really.
The music was very loud.
It was very loud, yeah, it was very loud.
Oh.
We were in the box. We're watching it from a box with the London mayor, Sadiq Khan.
Oh, wow.
We got very excited. So we invited him, and I'm gonna say this again because we invited Sadiq Khan onto the podcast, and his publicist replied saying he's too busy, but we hadn't given any specific dates.
Oh, wow.
So that's
well, you guys are seeing his office, aren't you, this week?
I'll bring it up to him.
Yeah, can you say? Because I'll tell you why. Because he's busy forever, according to his
publicist. He's so busy, he goes to Kendrick Lamar gigs.
Yeah. I know, right?
He's been on other podcasts, right? Literally the week after I heard him on another podcast. And then I did a travel show with my mum, right? Mm-hmm. So I was on the underground, like, about a month ago. I get a tap on the shoulder. It's Sadiq Khan, travelling on the underground. Says to me, where's your mum? Right?
Oh, my God.
I mean, the level that this guy is disrespecting
said,
me.
Where's what? Your mum?
Yeah.
Oh,
I said to him, she's on my podcast, where you refuse to be, because you're busy for the foreseeable, Sadiq! So, are there many live shows in Jackson, Mississippi?
You know, somewhat, but, like, they're always in, like, places I don't want to go.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're in, like, the club where somebody's going to probably get shot, and I'm like, nah, you know, like, and then sometimes they're artists I don't listen to a lot, and that's nothing against those artists, I just don't listen to them, you know, because I'm in the South, so we get some Southern rappers that I don't listen to. I listen to more West Coast and New York stuff, and I'm real selective with my Southern hip-hop. So, like, you know, I got nothing against Lil Boosie, but I'm not trying to go to a Boosie show.
But do people from the South get annoyed at you because they feel like you're you're not repping your area by not listening to Southern hip-hop, or people pretty used to that you listen to?
They don't care. Right. I do listen to some. But so I don't get to go to shows in Jackson. I'd probably have to go to, like, Atlanta.
But
you've
been to some live stuff, though. Did you say you went and saw Little Bow Wow?
That was my first concert
ever. What was that like? How was that?
It was fun, I guess. Yeah. You know, I was a huge...
Did you go, Mom?
Oh, yeah. My mom got me backstage.
Oh, wow.
And my mom got me, like, front row tickets.
Yeah?
She was a real MVP.
How old was he then?
I was, what, 13, 14?
How old is... Because he was a young...
He was about 13, 14,
yeah.
too.
Okay.
We were both 14. Around here, we pop them cops. Around here, we get them dogs. Every girl I see that look right like me just got hot. Just get it all about stacking up. Fall big here, but we can back it up. Long as everybody get crunk when they drop in the club, start acting up. I represent the SO.
How much of a Little Bow Wow fan were you?
I was the hugest Bow Wow fan.
The hugest.
Like, literally, they had a fan club thing online. And, like, you had to do, like, vote for his videos on 106 and Park per week to get points and stuff. I had more points than anybody in the world. I was the number one.
Than anybody
in the world. I was the number one.
You sat, like, 45 minutes into this interview?
And didn't tell that?
And not mention that?
I mean, that's another thing I blocked out.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Until he brought it up. But I was that. So I was a huge fan. Like, my room, I had posters everywhere. And like, I went to this CD store and they had this cardboard cutout of him that I thought was life size.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to make sense in a bit. So I thought it was life size. It was taller than me or whatever. So I asked the CD store if I could have it and they said, yeah. So I carried it through the mall and put it in our neighbor had to bring a pickup truck and put it in the truck, took it home, and I had it in my bedroom.
And do you recall what sort of looks you were getting as you walked through the mall?
You know what?
Envious?
I was running with it because I thought somebody was going to take it from me.
Yeah, sure.
Like that everybody is, in the mall wanted a little Bow Wow cut out.
The number two Bow Wow fan was chasing you.
God. Oh, that.
So that's how.
That piece of shit. So we're trying to get that cut out. Oh my God. Just everywhere you go, he's in the garden. I'm going to get that cut out.
Right. Yeah. So I had it in my room. And so I was a big fan. So the concert, the days before the concert, my mom called the guy at the radio station. She knew him. She was like, can you just get her backstage to meet him?
This is great parenting, by the way. Yeah. Well done.
I got another one. Mom. I got another story out about Left Eye from TLC.
Okay, great.
But so I get backstage to meet him, and you know, and security comes with him, and it's a bunch of us backstage, a bunch of fans backstage, and security's surrounding him, so you can't see, basically. And I'm looking because I'm like, I expect to see him, but you can't. And so
because he's so little.
When it's my time in the meet and greet line, I'm going up, and there's this really little kid standing here, and he's like, "What's up?" I'm Bow Wow, and I'm like. Oh.
Oh my God, that's how you responded.
That's what I'm thinking.
You got more points than anyone else in the world.
Did he know
and
that?
And you finally meet him and you go, oh.
I didn't say it out loud, I'm thinking it.
Okay.
And so I shook his hand, got a picture, blah, 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 and left. And afterwards, I told my mom, I was like, he's so small.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was expecting like The Rock or
In defense of him, he's not tried to hide it. He's
no,
called
he's
Little Bow Wow.
Bow Wow.
He's been pretty front and center about his size.
But he was
if he was called Huge Bow Wow.
Exactly.
I would understand your disappointment. I would understand why you'd be. You have a right to be annoyed. Yeah. Or even just Bow Wow,
Regular,
if you call himself regular sized Bow Wow, then I understand why when you're meeting him, you go, dude, what kind of fucking game are you playing?
But then, so he wasn't just tiny, like height wise, but just small statured. Yeah. So
complete
I was
shoulder,
like,
not broad, nothing.
And so also, there was a singer out at the time called Mario. So they were doing the concert together. Yeah. Mario was a couple of years older, blah, blah, blah. He came out.
3 foot tall.
No, he was taller.
Okay.
He was taller, and all of a sudden I was in love. So.
Oh, really?
Just totally switched.
Oh, my God.
That night, I made the switch.
You are so
in the
fickle,
room.
Man. That is disgusting.
I know.
You had the most points of anyone in the world, and just a taller guy comes out.
He was
his cologne.
And he had on my mom was trying to tell. He had on a nice cologne and he hugged me. I was in love after that. So that was it.
Do you get rid of the cardboard cutout then when
smashed it?
I did it because I was feeling bad about the fact that I switched up that, so I kept it around. But
just collecting just
in my closet.
Still got it.
You put it in a closet.
And then hunted for a Mario one.
Yeah. So, no, but you know, at that age.
Yeah, sure, I get it.
At that age. And then B2K came out and it was just, that was it. Like, that was it. I was sold, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is so sad.
We aren't loyal at that age.
No. What are you listening to at the moment, then?
I love both Kendrick and J. Cole.
Right.
You know, I love Joyner Lucas.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Joyner Lucas,
he
man.
He is awesome. He is so awesome. So.
I don't know why I said that like I prefer him to Jake. I love Kendrick and J. Cole. But Joyner Lucas seems to be the most divided, because like some people I know just don't.
Yeah, I love him. Also, there's a woman MC out of South Carolina called Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Rhapsody. A lot of people don't know about her. They need to know about her.
Okay, so you got something there. Well, in that case,
what tune should we play in? Yeah.
Like of them or just anybody?
A Rhapsody.
Well, Rhapsody.
Oh, she has a song called Sojourner's Truth. with J. Cole. I definitely recommend that.
Okay, there you go. Drop that in now. Now.
If you don't teach the ones that's coming up to multiply their cash, think for themselves, think beyond sales. Everything with worth don't come with some whistles and some bells. The ones that gotta leave behind, the ones you gotta bail. Meek Mill and working hard ain't too tall from a Meek Mill to keep it real. The realest niggas I know always kept it real. And I'ma tell you, black on black murder been whack. Ninth turn me up so they can hit me in the back.
Oh, you should listen to, if you have you, do you ever listen to any British hip hop?
You know,
there's no reason why I should have done
21 Savage.
Yeah, man. I've always said he's one of us. 21 Savage.
Finally.
Always claimed him. I've been claiming him from day.
You're the one who got him to fess up.
Yeah, I said to him, don't be ashamed of it, man. Drop the accent. All right, Rom. I'm 21 Savage.
But you know, I don't. I need some recommendations.
Well, you know, it's funny, right? Because, like, British hip hop and, like, grime and all that is in the best health it's been in for ages. But when Americans listen to it, I think it does take a little bit of time to adjust to hearing that accent. Do you know what I mean? Like, when I've played it to, like, Americans, but they sort of go, yeah, it's cool. Oh.
Yeah. This is one of my favourites.
No, it's different, isn't it? It's sort of different, kind of different flavour to what I'm used to. But, yeah, there's... well, Little Sims just got an album out. Okay. She's really good. And then there's a rapper called Dave. I sort of laughed because...
Dave?
You know Dave?
I mean, he's not really thinking outside the box, is he, there? Maybe his name isn't Dave, and that's the spin. His name's Steve. He said, let's go with Dave.
I just sort of...
Not even popping an MC on the foot. MC Dave. Young MC. Young Dave.
No, the thing is, he is amazing. But as I sort of said...
He used to be called Lil Dave.
What, you're not going to believe that there's a guy called Dave. So there's Dave, and also you need to check out Gary.
Yeah, Martin.
And there's Paul. And
Ian.
He's George.
Good.
Oh, my God.
That's
hilarious.
Dave's got an album called Psycho Drama.
I'm going to look it up.
Psycho Drama is really good.
Easy as the alphabet. 3 G's in a ring, call me Alvarez. My teacher used to say I need counselling. Couldn't stop asking me, what do you feel? There's so many old scars that they want to reveal. We got off on the wrong foot because I don't want them to heal. Nah, but if you're looking for a psycho, you got one. I thought I had a screw loose, but I lost one. 99 problems, money it is not one. My currency's Kenyan, that's in it for the long run.
Do you know Giggs?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, so Giggs was like, Giggs is, he just got an album out. But he did, like, he was on Drake's last album, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So there's a bit
he's signed a few British rappers, hasn't he?
Who, Drake has?
Yeah, I think
so.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Are you a Drake fan?
I got beef with Drake.
You got beef with Drake?
He doesn't know it, probably. He doesn't care, but
let's call it out now.
We wanted to use his song in the Hate U Give movie.
Right.
And apparently, now this is what I've been told. Apparently, they told him the context. Star was listening to it at the party with her friend Khalil.
Yeah.
And in the book, and we were going to do it in the movie, Khalil messes with her because she calls Drake her husband or whatever. She loves Drake. And he's like, you still love whiny ass Drake. And so apparently he took offense to that. He was like, I don't like that y'all calling me whiny.
Are you serious?
So basically, I guess he whined about being called whiny.
Yeah.
And didn't allow them to use the song in the movie.
Wow.
So I'm like, then he came out within my feelings. So I'm like, really?
Wow.
You're making you are in your feelings. Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I love you, Drake. Star loves Drake. She even was going to wear a Drake t-shirt at one point in the movie. Yeah. And that one line was it. I'm like, really?
Okay, listen, I've got beef with Drake as well. Okay. It's not for the same. Not for the same reason.
You don't need him.
No, we don't need him. In fact, just as a sign out, we're not going to play any of his music.
Yeah.
In tribute to Angie, we're never playing a Drake
From
song on this podcast ever again. So there you go, Drake.
There you go.
Yeah, you didn't want your song played? Congratulations.
It's not getting played on this ever again.
We come out of the recording and there's an email asking him to cut.
Yeah, Drake's coming on. No, we don't want you, whiny ass.
Yeah.
What's the deal? So, how come are you just here doing the promo tour for the book then, basically?
Yeah, yeah. I've been all over the country, it feels like, for the past week. Yeah, promoting the new book.
You're doing book signings?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of
book
signings.
You can relate to this.
Yeah.
Huh? You've just done a book tour.
Yes, but the difference between you and I is my book sold. My book sold, what, 12 to 13 copies?
New York bestseller.
Huh?
New York bestseller as well, your book?
No.
No.
No. But the point is, I had to do a book signing tour.
Yeah.
How'd you find it?
It was fun, you know.
Tell me, how'd you find it, really?
Yeah, no, it was fun, you know. I love doing the school visits, especially, you know, with the kids and schools and getting to talk to them about the book and signing the books for them. You know, but I will say it's always interesting coming here versus doing signings at home, you know.
How come? What's the difference?
Well, you know, with The Hate U Give, like, I got a kind of wide audience, you know, and so, you know, I have, when I came here, I had some older British white people coming to my signings about this book about hip hop.
And what did they say
to you? And, you know, I got the things of, you know, I love Hamilton. And I'm like,
oh my God.
I love
Oh my
Dave.
God.
And so there's you get why I say that. Yeah. So I'm like, okay.
And your book's been, is it true that you were sort of, they tried to censor it, or you were censored? I have read this thing about, this might be fake news.
But no, it's real.
The police wanted to ban your first book from, like, or they had some issue with it. Is that right?
Yeah, in South Carolina, the
so
police
what happened?
Union. The book was put on a summer reading list for a high school, along with another book that kind of touches on a similar topic called All American Boys.
Right.
And so the police union apparently found out, and they said that the two books were trying to create anti-police sentiment and thought that they should not be on the summer reading list.
Oh, my God. So then what happened?
And so they put it, it was all on the news, it was on CNN and all of this, but the...
That's good. Okay, good sorry.
It's good publicity.
Yeah. That's good, right?
You
that
know.
Is good. I would love it if my book got on the news.
Yeah.
The only news I get is Ramesh sits on his own in bookstore for 3 hours.
Waiting for people to turn up.
Eventually asked to leave by staff.
Book not in stock.
Yeah, sorry. So,
no.
So then what happened? They just...
A lot of teachers and educators and librarians spoke up for the book, and the kids did too, and they kept it on there.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, it was interesting to deal with that. But it happened, like, in Texas too. A school district banned the book, took it off all the shelves. And, you know, you can't tell kids that what they won't read, because that makes them want to read it even more.
Oh, my God. I mean, so, like, a book that's been banned.
That's
I mean,
perfect
come
book
on,
for them.
That's incredible, right?
Exactly. So I'm like, keep doing it. It makes my sales go up every single time. It really does. Like, they couldn't keep it in Houston, Texas, when they banned it in a school district there. So it's frustrating, but, you know, hey, do it. It's not going to shut me up.
Yeah,
you know, so
it feels like, I know this is such a trite thing. So it seems to be what everyone's saying, but that sort of thing seems to be happening more at them. We're in a weird time, aren't we, where that sort of thing is, and I think that alongside social media means that these things just get completely, like, blown up, don't they?
Oh yeah, for sure. But you know, I was waiting. I was like, okay, is Trump going to tweet about it?
That would be the absolute...
It would be the best thing, I'm going to say.
Just stood next to Melania standing.
Melania B.
Melania B. doesn't like the book either.
Tweet about it, because all the people that hate you are going to check it out.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people. So, yeah. But I was just waiting for it to happen.
Do you think we're going to get a movie of this book as well?
We're working on it, yeah.
Yeah,
we're working on it. Same film studio, Fox 2000.
Right.
Same production companies, same director, George Tillman Jr., but this time I get to produce, so I'm excited.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well,
that's good.
Yeah.
Plug one, plug two. Guest plugs for you.
Well, look, listen, we're out of time, pretty much, but you have been best guest ever?
Best guest ever.
What?
Obviously, we can still get your book. Your book came out in February, is that right?
Yes,
so,
yes.
Make sure you go and get that. And then sort of what's on the horizon for you? Obviously, the film. Anything else you got going on?
Yeah, I'm working on my third book at the moment.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can you give us any...
It's about a guy who does a podcast. An English guy called Dave.
He wants that.
gets imposter syndrome because he's not convinced he's got any talent.
And was
then every now and again he goes home and he just looks in the mirror and he feels a little bit sad. Then he goes out and pretends to his wife and kids that he's still happy.
And he has a really
I'm just trying to flesh
tattoo.
It out for you. It's not just randomly. Finally. It's all just coming to it randomly.
With the Richard Pryor tattoo.
Yeah.
It's set in the same neighborhood as the first two books, but it's not a sequel to either book.
Okay.
But the main character is someone my readers will know.
Okay.
So that's all I can say.
Oh, my Lord. Watch your space. Okay, so watch your space. Listen, Angie, congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you.
It is, it's really great you doing what you do, and we wish you all the very best with it, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, I've spoken for Rupert, I don't know if he
does. No, I wish you the best.
He might.
As well.
He might not wish you the greatest. I don't know.
No, I
made that
he's
assumption.
For me.
You do. I can speak for you. Yeah,
we both,
I've got it clarified. We both do wish the very best.
We established that he enjoys misogynistic hip hop.
Yeah.
So
yes,
do.
He does. Yeah, it's one of his favourite things. It's all he talks about.
It's my platform.
This
is my platform.
Two things he talks about: misogyny in hip hop and dick face tattoos. It's literally the only
and
two.
And my wisdom tooth.
Yeah, and his wisdom tooth. Yeah, dry socket. That's like his go-to dinner.
The pain is real, dude. The pain is real.
Well, look, thank you so much. Best of luck with it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Rupert.
Bye, Ramesh.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.